But we begin today with the start of school in the largest school district in central Indiana, and that is the Indianapolis Public Schools. Not only is it the start of school, it is the start of the preschool program in IPS, expanded kindergarten in IPS, plus all the regular 1 through 12 grades, plus the new guy gets officially hired, the superintendent designate, Dr. Louis Farabee, on Friday. He will be here this week, not only to meet with the board, meet with folks, but he's going to be a parent, taking his son around to find him an IPS school. In the house is the president of the IPS Board of School Commissioners, Diane Arnold, and board member, the Reverend Michael Brown. Guys, welcome.
Thank you
for having us.
I understand, Diane, that this has been probably, in going back and thinking of first days of school in IPS, maybe one of the quietest openings of the first day of school in IPS in a long, long time. Is that your feel today as you've gone around and heard reports?
I'm an advocate for no news is good news. Mm-hmm. And I think anytime we can get off and, you know, we anticipate that a few buses might be running late or a few children might not be registered where they think they are. But I think it's gone remarkably well. I'm very, very pleased.
Michael Brown, you were out at a couple of schools this morning. What'd you see?
Well, I tell you, I was at actually 5 schools. And the only situation that I saw was one young man's parents dropped him off at the wrong school. And the IPS police officer brought him over to Northwest, which was the school in his neighborhood anyway. However, that was no error of ours. It wasn't like he got on the wrong bus or something.
He has got dropped off parents. Wait, dropped off and one or more of the parents didn't come in and say hello?
Don't start.
Okay.
We got to get parents back to bring their kids to school on the first day.
Let me ask you, with the superintendent designate, and I think this will be the first time since, I believe, Dr. Zendejas had her, I believe it was a son at the time, enrolled in IPS. It'll be the first time in almost 20 years that the superintendent is also a parent. Diane Arnold, president of the board, how important is that as a role model for all parents in IPS, the person at the top of the pyramid is also not only the superintendent but also an IPS parent?
I think it was very important to this board. When we looked at the candidates, you know, we talked a lot about that among ourselves, and we talked a lot about that with the candidates, that it was important not only that if they have children, that their children attended, but that they lived in the district and supported the community that also supports our schools.
Mm-hmm. Michael?
She's absolutely right. IPS was good enough for my children, and I expect, you know, every employee actually to have their children enrolled in the district that not just signs their paycheck, but however the ones that they support. If it's not good enough for the board members, if it's not good enough for the superintendent, then certainly it isn't good enough for regular folk.
Now, walk the community through superintendent designate. I have to call him designate until there is a formal public vote on Dr. Farabee. He's the superintendent designate. He will be in later this week. He's going to meet with board members one-on-one in an executive session, and then he, you know, is going to go around and tour schools. He'll be officially approved on Friday evening. When do you all anticipate that he's here running this district?
That's one of the issues that we will be discussing on Wednesday evening to talk about what has, you know, he is employed in another district. He has to make plans to disengage from that district and those responsibilities. And, you know, we want that. We want someone who cares enough about, you know, the children they serve to not do a disservice to those children. I think optimistically we're hoping that he will be here permanently by September 1st.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not too bad. And he may be here a couple of times during the month of August to get some things up and going. But our hope is September 1st as a start date.
From the board's perspective, once he is here and on the ground running, what are the priorities? Because obviously mm-hmm. there still is this budget deficit that was worked through. There are issues of equity in terms of diversity at the upper levels of the administration in mm-hmm. IPS. You won't know until mid-September with the count date exactly what your enrollment is and what building utilizations are. From the board's perspective, what are the priorities moving forward? What should the community be prepared for?
I think most and foremost, this board and superintendent have to get to know each other and get on the same page. This board got together on a Sunday and crafted what we called some guiding principles of things we felt very passionate about for all of our children. Those guiding principles went to the candidates. I know Dr. Farabee is familiar with those. He spoke about those in his interview. I think that's a starting place for us to get together, work together. We absolutely have to come together and create a vision for the district that is embraced by both the board and the superintendent. And then we have to start crafting a strategic plan for how do we get there. We understand that 40 out of our 62 schools are DNF schools. We understand that, you know, we have lots of issues. We understand we have to cut millions of dollars out of our budget. But that's got to be done in a holistic fashion. It's got to be done with a plan and not just coming in and starting slashing. Dr. Hinckley has done a good job of coming in and kind of getting rid of some things, but hasn't hired people to in some key positions. You know, talent will be very, very important as we move forward. Who are the people that are going to be there to help the superintendent do the job that is expected by this board?
How important is it that you're going to be crafting a strategic plan with the superintendent, knowing that you've got 40 or X numbers, let me be fair, X number of schools that may be DRF, and you're doing this at the same time that there's at least now three committees at the state level reviewing the grading system. Will that help you, in other words, having a real, honest snapshot of where your schools stand and knowing that nobody was in the back room putting their finger on the scale, and then you really know where you stand? That almost seems like this review is going to help you guys in that planning process.
We hope there's a lot of things going on out there that are really going to help us as we move forward. We've engaged the Chamber of Commerce that is going to come in and do a review of different aspects of our district. That's going to help us look at how can we be more efficient and more effective in what we do. I think certainly the grading, you know, that's an issue. And, you know, when people talk about, it's really important to me because I do community work. I'm a director of a community center. When they put a grade on a school, they're not only grading that school, they're grading that community because, you know, people check on the grades of these schools.
Right.
And it's an economic development issue. So we have to believe and understand that these grades are fair because they're very important. And when people come to my community center and ask me to help them find a school, the first thing they ask me is, what's the grade of that school?
Mm-hmm.
And so if there's no fidelity in what those grades are and how they were assigned to schools, then we have an issue. So I'm hoping that we will be able to look at this. I'm hoping that, you know, moving forward, things will be fair and it will be a level playing field.
There has been so much publicity, Michael Brown, about the IPS middle and the combined middle and high schools that were kind of lumped together under the previous grading system, and a lot of publicity about that and people reading that going, that's not fair. It's almost that in the midst of the Tony Bennett mess, people looked at what happened to IPS, and not just people that lived here. People have opinions that were around here, but I'm talking about people literally across the country that wouldn't know IPS from III or IT&T to say, wait a minute, what happened to those guys isn't necessarily fair. Is that what you're hearing from people across the country?
Exactly. I have probably had 600 emails. Four of whom are from people that I know, and a lot of them are repeat emails. They're not making it sound like I'm getting them from 600 different people that are in my Council of Urban Boards of Education committee, and they want to know exactly what happened. They said, Brown, what's your take? I said, my take is the rules weren't the same for me as they were for this other particular school. And make no mistake about it, I have no problem with that school moving from a C to an A. What I want to look at is if, based on that exact same metric that they use, do I have schools that could have moved from an F to a C? And if so, were they schools that were taken over by the state? That's the biggest issue I have with it.
You may have questions for these two members of the IPS school board, Diane Arnold, president, member Michael Brown, 239-1310, 239-1310, or send me an email at praiseinit.com or a text message at 85620, keyword Amos. We've been talking about grades and all that highfalutin stuff, but there are some preschool kids in IPS in the new preschool program. Any idea how that's going? Can the teachers handle them yet?
Well, one thing I've heard is that it has been a very exciting time mm-hmm. in a preschool center. I heard 400 to 500, and so many.
Is that what was planned for, budgeted for? Is that a little bit higher? Because I know the previous superintendent wanted it more aggressive. You guys said, hey, let's ease into this.
Right.
I think the first plan was like 1,400. Mm-hmm. We felt that was a little too aggressive. I think we were thinking maybe 700 or 800.
Right.
I think some sides of town, some communities wanted more than we had originally allocated. Some communities didn't have the interest we thought. Mm-hmm. And so I think we looked at how to reallocate classes to some of the neighbors. I know the west side Dr. Brown's area was an area of high interest and high need for early childhood.
And, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I was at School 109, and they were predicted to have 290 students. This morning at 9 o'clock, they had 325. So the west side's busting at the seams, as it usually is.
Is that going to be as Dr. Farabee comes in here and looks at everything and he has in his background, had to not only deal with bringing poor performing schools up to standards, but also figuring out, you know, how to get out of a deficit situation, looking at building utilization? Is that going to be moving forward on this school year one of the things the board is going to have to tackle? Building utilization.
I certainly think that's one of the issues that's going to be on the table. With the original kind of assessment that was done in the different departments that's now going forward to the Chamber of Commerce, building utilization is one of those issues. We have buildings that are only a third full. We have some that are half. We have some buildings right. that are going to be unused because we've used them for swing schools when we've been doing capital projects. So we're really going to have to come to terms, because I think we fully understand the charter school movement is continuing to move forward, and they're looking for space. And the legislature has now said that we have to provide those schools and those buildings to these entities. And so I think we're going to have to be very strategic. I'm excited about the fact that in a couple of cases, we figured out how to share buildings with a charter institution and a traditional IPS school. The new Enlace school that you spoke about is sharing space with Gambold. That's a great opportunity.
And that's what happened over at 30th and what's that school over 30th Street with
Coleman.
With Coleman and Kip for a number of years.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it also at Arlington, although Arlington is a takeover school.
Right.
The Tinley Renaissance Academy, their building wasn't ready, and so they're going to share some of the space. So I think we're going to have to be creative. I think one of the things we've done in the past is we've not been willing to come to the table and work with other groups. And I think those days are over, and we're going to have to figure out a different way to do things.
I was looking at one of the coverages of one of the television stations, and they were reporting, oh, things are going to be safe at IPS, and parents need to understand that you're going to be buzzed into a building. And I'm going, that was normal before all of this. How important? I know safety has been a concern, and that's something that the administrators and the interim superintendent has been dealing with, just making sure the parents understand safe, and you just cannot just walk up into an IPS school. You got to get buzzed in.
The amazing thing is,
but y'all been doing that.
We have been doing it, and they would have known it if they'd been visiting IPS schools to see for themselves. But so often. Rumor and innuendo and gossip has been the letter of the day. And what people have to find out is IPS schools are safe. IPS schools are clean. IPS schools have employees that really care about young people. And that's something that I don't know how we missed the bullet on that, but we've got to start making sure that we do a better job of public relations.
239-1310, 239-1310. I also noticed IMPD says that they're starting to enforce the school zone stop. So remember, even though you may not know which district or what school is open, just assume they all are. And back your speed down to 25 miles an hour in the school zone, because that ticket is a grand.
Yes.
Not $200, a grand. And many of y'all ain't got it. Yeah, Chris said, a grand? Yeah, grand. 239-1310, 239-1310 afternoons with Amos with the two of the members of the IPS school board. In the process of the search, when you all announced Dr. Farabee, I mean, you all looked like each of you had won the Academy Award. Did this process, Diane Arnold, bond this board together?
I think very much so. You know, this board, we had three brand new members come on this board in January, and this board accomplished a lot of different things in a very short period of time. There were a lot of different agendas. There were a lot of different personalities. There were a lot of different mindsets, and it was really, really difficult. I think we really struggled in the beginning of trying to come together and trying to figure out. I think everyone was passionate about children, but I think everybody came from a different mindset. So I think the process, I think certainly the first breakthrough I saw was the Sunday we met and worked on the guiding principles. Mm-hmm. And I think that was the first time that we actually got in a room and we determined to stay there until we came up with a product that we could all believe in and agree with.
On those guiding principles, I don't want you to break confidence since that was part of the recruitment process of superintendents, and that's a personnel matter that stays confidential. At what point will those guiding principles be released?
Oh, they've been released. They're on the website.
What are some of those that the listeners may want to
We talked about the equity issue. Mm-hmm. We talked about safety for our children. Mm-hmm. We talked about high academic standards. Help me out, Dr. Brown.
Well, you know, one of the biggest things was equity and safety. We don't have equity across our district, let alone throughout the city, throughout the state. Mm-hmm. And we thought it was very important that our neighborhood schools were afforded the same privileges as our magnet schools.
We talked about, too, talent. We understand that the best schools are schools with strong building leaders.
Very good.
We talked about autonomy and giving schools a smaller central office. So we talked about being fiscally responsible. So I think they were the things that most people think are important, but I think we really spent a lot of time crafting and articulating what we wanted to say. And I think that really kind of moved us. And then I think the whole process of going through reviewing the applications and the resumes and meeting mm-hmm. together and meeting candidates, I just think the time we spent together drew us closer and helped us all kind of get focused on what we needed to do.
Y'all might want to, and now the school has started, maybe put that back up on the homepage of the website at ips.k12.in.us so that people can kind of see those. As I've talked to people in education, and I think everybody agrees that the role of the principal or school leader or whatever you call that individual is critical. What can a district like IPS do to either grow your own or develop, you know, better school leaders internally, or go out and start stealing good school leaders from elsewhere? Because that seems to be the area of greatest need.
Well, you know, that's amazing you should say that, because people have been stealing school leaders from us for a long time. Kerry Dank, who is the principal at Crystal House Academy, came from School 82 mm-hmm. in IPS. Jamie Brady, she's not an employee, so I can talk about her, was recruited away, as was Kelly Marshall. These are great principals, DeJuan Majors. These were great principals that were lured away because we actually just couldn't pay them as much as they offered. Mm-hmm. We have got to do a much better job of growing our own. And when we first, the key to that is first identifying talent. You have to identify people who have the personality and the educational expertise to be able to run a building, because there are a lot of people that know how to run a building, but they don't have the personality to be able to deal with parents. Mm-hmm. So you have to look the part, and you have to be able to walk the walk.
One of the things on Friday, me and my Friday friend, we were looking at different A through F systems, and we looked at New York and Chicago and Arizona, of all places. And in New York and Chicago, one of the things that goes into the evaluation of a school is how people perceive the the what goes on in that building. It has nothing to do with how kids did on a test, but it has to do with safety in the building and how you get along with parents and parents getting along with school. As the state looks at how they do that, should they look at that as a metric?
I mean, I think the climate or the culture of the school is evident when you walk in the door. Mm-hmm. When you walk in, you can tell whether this is a well-run building.
That's right. That's right.
It's the principal, you know, they don't have to be yelling at everyone, and it doesn't have to be chaotic. You know, the best schools that we have the best building leaders and good, strong community partnerships. If you have those two elements, that school's going to be successful.
Let me go to a call, and I want to ask about something that Dr. Farabee said when he talked to media when he was here in the interview. Let me go to Lori at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hi, Amos. I had discussed with you on before when my child was in Warren Township.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do. My child is being failed miserably by IPS right now because she was in a program, and because the school lost their school nurse, my child had to be moved to a new school where they put her in a regular class. My child cannot handle 27 students in her class. Well, I get there today to find out they don't even have her IEP yet. Ooh. My child has epilepsy.
And
she
they
can't drink out of a straw. She can't. These are things that should have been discussed before she even came to the school.
All right, God, let me ask a couple questions, Lori. What the school where your daughter? First of all, your daughter is now going into what grade?
She's being held back into the first because she does not process. Her paperwork says, her neuropsych testing paperwork says she needs an assistant all day, which I'm being fought on that because they don't want to give her one.
Well, hold on. The IEP, the IEP says that?
No, not her IEP, her neurological testing.
But that should
her
have been.
IQ.
But, okay, well, hold on. But see, based upon the testing and other things, that should have, if having an attendant with her, that should have been part of the IEP, and you are within
okay,
your rights to recruit.
It's basically, I don't know where to go from here because where she was last year, she was in a program called an RTI. There were only 5 other students, so that worked great because she was getting that one-on-one because there were 3 teachers.
No. I get all of that. Has the case conference for this school year been scheduled?
Okay, they tell me at the end of last year this case conference will go with her this year.
No. You can request a case conference at any time. Let me repeat that. At any time, like today. What school?
Well, when I went up to the school today.
No, I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear what the school said, because unless
no,
the school.
I'm just going to give you an example.
Okay.
Also, my daughter was walking out with another parent because there was nobody there to take her to her class.
What's...
I don't even know what her class was, and I'm sitting here watching her with another teacher, and the teacher's going, "Oh yes, I see exactly what you're talking about."
All right, what school?
I don't know what strangers
all right,
are.
All right, Lori, a couple things. What school are we talking about?
School 99.
We're talking about school 99.
There's only 2 schools, IPS schools, that she had to choose from that had a school nurse. So these kids are being bombarded into these 2 schools because they're the only ones that have nurses.
One
of her other students that was in her class is not potty trained, and they mainstreamed her in a regular kindergarten.
All right, hold on, because I don't want you to leave me. I want to let President Arnold and Commissioner Brown, who've been listening, respond.
Well, it's hard for me to respond to details because I don't know. I do know that IPS has a terrific special ed department. We have people who come into our district because of the special services that we have. I do think that you need to go above the school to get where it needs to be.
Well,
I would not.
Hold on.
Thing was with Mary Lowe, her IEP.
Okay. Well, and
they felt that she didn't qualify for special ed because she is a little more advanced in the academics.
Let me ask, her IEP, basically, is there a goal on that IEP? In other words, by the end of a school year, these are the things we're going to achieve for this young lady?
Yes, and it's kind of basically the same thing as it was last year.
And are there things in that IEP you disagree with?
Yes.
And why then, if you disagreed with it, why did you sign off on it?
Because I was getting frustrated because my child only went to school part-time last year because he couldn't handle all day.
Hold on. Lori, when you went to the case conference, did you go by yourself?
Yeah, well, I went with her behavioral therapist who also told me to ask for another case conference because she wasn't happy with it either.
No, then she told you right. First of all, under the law, you have the right to request a case conference at any time during the school year.
Okay.
And that's one of the things that you need to do. Two, you have the right to ask and take the complaint up to the head of special education for IPS, who is?
Rob Warner.
Okay.
And you can request that. Two, three. And now, if they dog you out for any reason, you have the right to go to the State Department of Education and file a grievance. That's your right under the law. Fourth, you on a case conference, you can bring anybody in there. You can bring mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, your faith leader, your pastor or assistant pastor. You don't go in there by yourself.
Okay.
You understand?
Well, like I said, it was getting frustrating, and 99 was in total chaos this morning.
Okay.
Kids were just running around outside and everywhere.
And the issue with, I'm sure we have more than two schools that have nurses, so
we do.
I'm not sure where that. I don't know what limitations they have for attendance. I know 99 is the Project Restore school,
that's right,
which has a special program there, but it's not considered a magnet. Mm-hmm.
Lori, what I want to do, so I don't get out and violate any confidences of that young lady, I want you to hold. Lori, you there?
Yes.
I want you to hold on, and if you would be so kind as to give Chris off the air your name and a phone number where you can be reached during the day, and you can bet your bottom dollar somebody from downtown is going to call you, if not today.
I knew they would when I called you.
In the morning, and they will figure this out, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, Lori, hold on. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's afternoon's name is we got what the guiding principles are. For IPS, they include expectations that every student can learn at high levels and graduate from high school with the skills needed to successfully transition to post-secondary education or employment. The district's responsibility is to achieve the success with each child without any excuses based on the child's background. Talent, the district places priority in making IPS the best place in the country to be a teacher, school leader, administrator. We'll recruit teachers, school leaders, and administrators who have a passion for teaching urban children and reward excellence with good pay.
There you go.
Empowerment to the greatest extent possible. Decisions regarding school staffing programs and allocation of time and funding are made by school leadership, where staff best understands the needs of individual students and the school community as a whole. We value innovative and bold leaders accountable for education outcomes. Equity. The district will ensure that all students attending neighborhood or magnet schools will have fair access to equal resources and opportunities. Accountability. The district will set high goals for its performance, gathers and acts on data about its results and reports to the public regularly and honestly about its programs. Performance issues at the school level will be addressed in a timely manner. Engagement. In alignment with its goals and strategies, the district fosters strong relationships with students, families, neighborhoods, community organizations, businesses, and other government agencies. Early childhood education. That's new. In collaboration with community partners, the district will prioritize high-quality early childhood education in an effort to ensure every student enters school prepared to succeed. Resource management. The district will allocate the majority of its funding to the school level. In order to send the majority of the district's resources to schools, the central office will become much leaner and focused on a targeted set of key functions. Diversity. The district creates an environment which celebrates the diversity of the student body, faculty, and staff in the communities they serve. And finally, enrichment. The district strives to create well-rounded citizens through the offering of enrichment programs that include but are not limited to arts, music, sports, and academic competition. It's not bad. And preschool is the new piece.
Right.
239-1310. 239-1310 is afternoon's name. Let me see. Going to Anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon. My question is specifically directed to the president. She said they spent a quality afternoon determining those guiding principles, but she wasn't able to recite them. So that just brings up a question for me.
Mm-hmm.
And with the elimination of jobs, I'm curious how they're going to go about community engagement, particularly because their job was eliminated. And then finally I saw Dr. Hinckley did exactly what she said she did not, which was eliminate jobs. I'll disconnect and listen.
All right. I think I understand. Is one of the issues this board is going to have to address moving forward in this school year is the whole jobs thing that occurred in the last and in your guiding principles said that the central office would be leaner. That implies that either people will go out of the central office back into buildings and work with kids, or they're going to be someplace else.
Exactly. Well, let me bail you out here. I couldn't recite the guiding principles either if I had to. What we want to do is we still face a $30 million deficit. There are still going to be reductions, whether they be reductions in programs, in buildings, or in employees. And when 92% of your budget is salary and benefits, when you're talking about cutting $30 million, you're talking about people. And we may not like it. As a matter of fact, I voted no. You know, it had to be done. Everybody knew it had to be done. However, we may disagree on how to do it. And that's something that we'll all come to terms with. But eventually, we've got to get down to that number. And, you know, we're not talking about $30 million today, but we're talking about $30 million in before calendar year 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to make these reductions, and I know it's rough, and until we start getting kids back from, I know a lot of the issue with buildings is that we were waiting for the DSEG order to be lifted, and we would get all of those students back.
Mm-hmm.
And we wanted to make sure, because those are the areas where we have less children, we have to make sure there are buildings for these students to come back to.
But we're down to, like, the last two, I think, classes left in the DSEG area, juniors and seniors in Perry and Decatur and Franklin. So we're really – everybody else is back,
right,
for all intents and purposes. Are we at a point where you can now really look at buildings?
And, well, and another issue is, and Diane can back me up on this, most of our population has shifted to the west side of town.
Mm-hmm.
And if we close any more buildings on the east side of town – we got to have some place for students to attend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on is on the east side of town, specifically northeast, we're losing families. I mean, they're closing apartment complexes. People are moving away.
Mm-hmm.
And they're either going west or going south or going downtown. But
there's an imbalance in buildings and capacity where in some parts of the district you're at capacity, in other parts of the district you got ghosts going through there.
Right. And education is an economic development issue. You know, we want people to move back to the city and move back to, you know, the urban core so that, you know, we will increase the tax base and more people will live and we can educate more children. But it's kind of a catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we believe that every community deserves a high-quality community school.
Right.
And I think that's our dilemma with the magnet schools versus community schools. We've got great magnet schools, but every time you take a community school and make it into a magnet school, you've taken that school away from that community, mm-hmm, unless everyone in that community wants to attend that magnet. So, you know, there's a lot of issues to deal with.
And parental involvement is a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
And people who take the time to sit down and fill out that magnet application are normally your more involved parents.
Mm-hmm.
We have to find ways to engage parents who, for many of them, didn't have a pleasant educational experience. So we have to find a way to tell them, hey, it school is cool. You need to come in. We need to welcome them in and show them what's going on and how much we care about. Because normally, I used to say, I go into schools where my children are because I wanted the teachers and the administration to see that I cared. Once they saw that I cared, they started caring.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe we need to take that same ideology and use it in reverse.
One other thing, I'll come back to that. Mm-hmm. When Dr. Farabee was here and he was talking with the media, and they were asking him about accountability, and he said, yeah, I know the state has their accountability system, but I want to have my own accountability system to be able to evaluate schools and be able to tell everybody on that. Y'all agree with that? That yeah, we got A through F, but that if the superintendent wants to say, hey, you know, school 99, it needs to be doing a little better, or school 109 is kicking it, that ought to be part of the equation?
Well, I think, you know, we're at the control of those people who make those decisions. Clearly, if funding is mm-hmm. Provided based on the grades that are or whatever criteria set up, that has to be a part of. What I'd like to see us do and what I hope is that our standards are even higher than what those expectations are.
And that's exactly what I think he meant by that. I can understand where someone could twist or skew that, but he meant that we've got tests, and we need to use the data that we have from that test in a diagnostic fashion, as opposed to, it's an all or none synaptic policy.
I think we have to go in. We've got some great community schools, and I'm not sure what separates that. I don't know if it's the building leader. I think for way too long we have moved non-performing principals from school to school.
Right.
It's been a revolving door of moving people. You know, we've got some schools that aren't performing that have had three principals in 4 years. Hmm. We have so many different kinds of curriculum that we keep throwing at these schools. So I think we really have to get a handle on calming things down, getting good leaders in that will stay, and getting programs that those schools want instead of forcing a whole bunch of curriculum programs down on schools that may not be the best fit for that school.
Well, that's really, really profound what you said, and let me translate that. If you're going to hold me accountable, mm-hmm. you need to allow me to select my staff, mm-hmm. As opposed to sending me a bunch of people that may or may not have been successful in their previous assignment, because for years that's what's happened. We've taken people that were a reduction in force or were displaced, and we've assigned them to a principal and said, here, work with them.
But what keeps all the good principals from taking all the good people, and then what's left is them?
That's exactly what happens. Every time you get a good principal in a school, and they establish their staff, and then in a year or 2 years, they're transferred to either a poor-performing school because they're a great leader, then all of the good leader or all of the good teachers follow that principal.
Wouldn't it be better also to tell that high-performing principal, hey, one of your jobs is to create, to help build your replacement, not to have that person leave the school, but, to develop a Mr. Spock or a Will Riker or somebody that, it's like in television. Television always got a hit show, and then they spin the hit show off to another, take a hot character and take it to another show.
That's absolutely correct. We've got to do a better job of homegrowing leaders.
Let me go to Raymond to be our last caller with some of the members of the IPS School Board, President Diane Arnold and Commissioner Michael Brown. Hi, Raymond.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I've heard much of the conversation. I may have missed some, but I've lost two of the neighbors around me because our area is becoming more multicultural, and one of the couples were Butler professors, and they're moving to Zionsville because they said the IPS parental involvement was poor. And I hear a lot of educators and the administrators being held accountable, but what exactly are parents required to do and how many times during the year? Because she went to a PTL meeting or whatever they're called, and there were three parents. How involved are they required to be with the students?
Well, we can't legislate parental involvement, that's for one thing. And if I had the answer to that question, we'd all retire and be millionaires. We do have to find ways to reach out to parents to get them back involved. I mean, whether it be through sports, acting, chili suppers. We know what it takes to get them in the building. We just have to make sure that once we get them in there, we engage them.
And we have to have invitational practices in school. Again, I go back to that culture or that environment of a school. When you walk in, there's either a very welcoming environment and culture, or it's a very closed off. I've been in schools that as a school board member, it wasn't very friendly and warm to me.
Yeah.
So I can imagine for parents. So we've absolutely got to figure out how to brand that and promote that level of parent engagement. A lot of our parents work very hard. Some of our parents work two jobs. Some of our parents are single parents with multiple children.
Right.
They lack transportation to get to school. They're not bad parents. They're not bad people. But they have a lot of barriers to becoming actively engaged in their children's education. We have to help remove those barriers.
All right. President of the IPS School Board, Diane Arnold, Michael Brown, Commissioner. The new superintendent designate is coming to town this week. His contract will be approved at a public meeting this Friday, 5:30, at the Education Center. All that and a lot more. And if you have not enrolled your child in IPS, I'm supposed to tell you that you can call the Office of Student Assignment at 226-4415, 226-4415, or you take your child directly to school, which is preferable, and enroll them on site. And if you had a problem with the bus, call transportation. 226-4500, 226-4500, 226-4500. Diane Arnold, President, and Commissioner Michael Brown of the IPS School Board. Guys, thanks very much for being with us. Glad to have you.
Thank you for having us.